Here, this is a list, maybe we talk about this for a minute, some types of False Claims Act cases, and we just put up these. You have your typical cases where you see upcoding or things that are billed incorrectly. You said you did A, but you billed for B, or you billed for a different level, or you unbundled or bundled or something where you've not billed it correctly. You have false certification where you may have certified that you were in compliance with something, but at the end of the day you weren't, and so you've made that false statement. Your standard of care, you know, I like to look at this. This, I think, is an area that's a little, somewhere you see it coming up in cases now, because the standard of care in a defense contractor is you have specifications for a contract, and if you don't follow it, then you put in inferior products. But here, if you're talking about quality of care of professional medical services, you know, at what point does it stop, just stop being maybe a negligence action and turn into a fraud case? And the examples you've seen in the past have been nursing homes where maybe the nursing homes have been so negligent in the care that you go see the patients and they have bed sores. It's just really horrible conditions that I don't think anybody here, if that was your family member, would feel like, why are we paying for any of this care? That's easy. I think now we see more and more people fighting over medical judgments and medical decisions. We've reversed false claims is where if you know you owe money and you decide not to pay it back, the fact that you owe some money itself may not be a violation of the law. It could be you made a mistake and you identified it and you said, all right, I made a mistake, I owe some money back. But if you decide not to pay it back and you know that you owe it, that is what can be a separate violation under the False Claims Act. And then you see we put in medical necessity and then also tainted services. I put tainted services just to pick up kind of your Stark and kickback, your referral law violations, because once you violate those, then the argument is you've tainted all of the services that have been referred from that doctor and whatever he or she referred. So with that kind of, I don't know, thoughts, what you might see in your practice, Bill and Jill, in your office?
Yeah, a couple of comments here. Many years ago, we predicted, and everybody was saying that the trend would be on medical necessity and quality of care cases, and the defense bar was outraged that the government was going to try to criminalize malpractice cases and bring actions on it. We never really saw that develop. The cases, as Scott mentioned, were worthless service cases where we would all agree that the care just probably wasn't provided or was so substandard that it was hard to quibble with. There is, you know, continues to be some thought that we'll see more of these cases. And from the provider side, you wonder, you know, where the line is. If you have a 15% error rate, probably not an indication of fraud. If you have a 55% error rate, is that some indication of fraud? And so what we really worry about is that the government's going to use data, they're going to do sampling of claims, they're going to get an expert, and they're going to say the error rate is so high that it must be fraud. And then we put an expert that says the error rate's actually much lower than that, and we'll just repay these claims. It's an overpayment case. It's not a False Claims Act case. We've so far found that those cases aren't very enticing to U.S. Attorney's Office because of the battle of experts, and that unless there's something else, they have a cooperator, they have some other evidence of outlier activity, that they're not going to bring those cases or pursue them. Perhaps it'll be a decline case. So we haven't really seen that, but it continues to be a fear just because of how expensive those cases are to develop. The one other thing I will say in this area that we deal with a lot is you have a client that or provider that finds something on their own. And it's an issue with a doctor. Let's just use a lease. They find out that a doctor has been occupying the space next to their lease. They picked a lock on a door, and they've been occupying a space. They found it through a walkthrough. They now understand, okay, we've got this problem. And the fair market value for the rent over the last, 10 years that they had it was $100,000. But the client doesn't want to do anything with it. They're like, we don't want to do anything with it. And so even though that first lease thing, that mistake may not have been a kickback, there probably wasn't any intent, there was probably nothing in it. If you don't follow through with it, and this is the part that the providers have a hard time with, is that now you have a known issue and you have a debt that a physician owes you, you've got to do something with it. And so really it puts the burden back on the provider to pursue the doctor, to go and try to figure out what to do with it. Or then you could end up in a reverse False Claims Act situation, because you have an obligation, you have a debt that's owed to you, and if you forgive that debt, then you know now perhaps you are you're in the False Claims Act territory. So it's one of those sticky situations where you may not have had a violation on the front end, but once you discover it and you don't deal with it correctly, then you back yourself into another problem.
Yeah. And Jill, let me just ask you. I mean, the things that you see in your office and. Also, I'll ask this question. It seems that all the complaints these days still have a lot of reference to Stark and kickback. There's always, they just seem to add it to everything else that they allege, and it still seems to be a favorite. But what are the sort of things you see, and maybe what are the things that interest your office or don't interest your office?
We are seeing right now, we see a lot of home health, a lot of hospice.
Okay.
I think, you know, that's been the way that's just been a trend for a while now. The other thing that we have seen an increase in, and I personally have had several cases in, is long-term care. And that's almost a flip medical necessity standard of care case. I have worked nursing home quality care cases. We settled one 2 years ago with health services management, and that was where there were worthless services. Mm-hmm. What we are seeing with LTACs is too much. It's the opposite. It's not that there's not enough care. There's too much care. And we follow the trend of whether it's medically necessary for all this therapy. And, I mean, we have to be very careful with those, because medical necessity can be and is a very slippery slope. But we have been successful in some cases with LTACs where we've watched the RUGS rates, you know, the RUs, the ultra high. We see a pattern there, and we have been able to successfully settle those cases.